5 on looking at the law of love. But even if I do control my actions, handling my feelings is something else. I know I should love God and others, even my enemies, but I'm not sure I can love everyone. Most of the time, I don't know how I feel. I don't think I really know what love is all about. You're not alone. Very few know what love is all about. In the Bible, however, it's quite clear. As faith is the substance in our relationship to God, love is the caring consciousness of it. The faith is the flow of God's energy through our spirits, which sustains our capacity to be vitally related to Him. Love is the flow of God's caring through our spirits, which infuses that relationship with sensitivity towards Himself and others. The law of love governs the interaction between ourselves and God, and the interactions between ourselves and others. But what do you mean by love? It seems so elusive and uncertain. The problem is with the inadequacy of the English word love, as well as with human expectations and illusions about it. The English word is used for clothes, dogs, and hamburgers, and sex, as well as for the love of God and for the tenderest personal affections. It is used so indiscriminately as to lose any significant meaning. It is absurd to apply one word to so many different kinds of emotion. The Greek language in which the New Testament was originally written has no such absurdity as one word which answers to the English word love. The Greeks used the word agape for respectful consideration. The Bible lifts the word and uses it of God's caring for the world. They had another word, phile, for the warmer affection of family and friends, and yet another, eros, for the more simple physical attraction. The Bible uses agape, both of God's caring for the world and the caring consciousness that He brings to our spirits. Agape, a sense of caring for others, is an expression of the spirit. Phile, a feeling of affections for others, is an expression of the emotion. But isn't caring also an emotion? What's the difference between the sense of caring and the feeling of affection? There is a sense of caring that goes beyond emotion. It is others' consciousness more than self-consciousness. Agape, caring, involves a consciousness of the needs in others, not necessarily a feeling of attachment to others. Phile was used of human emotions produced in the mind and expressed in the warmer feelings of family and friends. To understand, then, we must distinguish between the caring of God in the spirit and the human affections in the flesh. The spirit where God dwells possesses His divine caring. The flesh, the realm of the mind or self, produces human affection. What do you mean by affection? I'm not even sure of that. Commonly, affection is what most people mean by love. It describes mild to intense reactions of pleasure and appreciation. It is used in this book to denote various degrees of human love. And what do you mean by flesh? I always thought that was our bad side, the unholy desires. The word flesh is applied to all natural functions of the mind. These functions are not necessarily unsound, but always undependable. The flesh or self is the human instrument through which the spirit functions. It only functions well when submissive to the Spirit of God. The flesh, touched by sin and death and the rebellion, does not itself possess the Spirit of God. It remains subject to human frailty. The human spirit, which is possessed by the Spirit of God, must exercise constant control over the functions of the flesh. The spirit may indeed possess the love of God, but that love is expressed by a human instrument. If the human instrument be not controlled, the love of God cannot be properly expressed. The control of the instrument is a continual problem, but the Spirit of God within gives strength in our weakness. The nature of the love which the Spirit possesses is the caring consciousness of God dwelling in us. Agape is God's love dwelling in our spirits and expressing in itself in infinite caring for the world. Phile is the human feeling produced by the mind and expressing itself in infinite craving for companionship. The agape of the Bible is not the changeable caring of human emotions. It is a changeless sense of God consciousness and others' consciousness. Agape does not preclude human feelings, but human feelings are not a reliable gauge of agape. Phile is neither unimportant or undesirable. It was the common word for family relationships. But it was much in evidence among the early believers, but never pressed as a center to salvation. It seemed to describe the warmer friendship of those who had developed a camaraderie in Christ. The Bible makes a clear distinction between agape and phile in a famous encounter between Jesus and Peter. It occurred on the shores of Galilee after the resurrection. Peter had denied Jesus. Jesus was testing his loyalty. Remembering Peter's boast of peerless fidelity, Jesus asked him now if he could say that he even cared. For Peter, devastated by shameful denial, caring was not enough. He must vow affection. Jesus had used agape. Do you really care so much? Peter responded with phile. More than that, I am your friend. Grieved that his love should be classed as caring, he wanted assurance that friendship was restored. Jesus finally accepted Peter's expression. If you really are my friend, feed my sheep. God requires of his creatures only the will to care. He does not demand the response of human feelings. While human emotions cannot always be separated from agape caring, neither can they be relied upon as a stable part of agape caring. Peter's pressing of the more personal feelings, while quite acceptable, even admirable, was apparently voluntary. How can human emotions ever be mandated, since they involve too many diverse and complex factors? For some, the feelings flow freely, as part of the nature they were born with. Some of a more conservative nature hold their feelings in check, while others, crushed by constant catastrophe, have long been dulled to pleasure or pain. All have equal favor with God. He measures not love by human emotions. Human emotions arise from patterns in the mind, often a fixed part of the personality. The love of God in our spirits, like faith and joy and peace, function beyond the mind, beyond feelings, beyond personality. The love of God in our spirits remains pure and selfless, but is often distorted when channeled through the faulty patterns of the mind. Given the limitations of the human mind, it cannot adequately express the love of God within. Thus, feelings about God are undependable as a measure of our true love for him. It is not a matter of feeling good about God, but sensing our integral union with God in the Spirit. The Spirit himself bears witness of our spirit. We communicate our caring beyond human capacity. We have true love for God when we have him within. For God is love, and he that loves is born of God. So love is the spirit as stable as God in spite of the changeable feelings of the mind. The mind cannot judge the measure of God's love in the spirit because such love is beyond the mind. Thus, to say one loves God or does not love God enough is only an evaluation of surface feelings. It is not that the feelings about God are undesirable. It is only that human feelings are undependable. Satan attacks the mind and stirs it to doubt. He confuses it with earthly feelings and illusions about God. It is better to trust in God's own love in our spirits than the fragile feelings about God in our minds. The proof of our love for God is not in our feelings for him, but the continual sense in the spirit of our oneness with him. There is a deep underlying sense that he is there in spite of surface feelings reflecting doubt and conflict. The reality of God's love is independent of all our feelings. It is continually sustained in our spirit, whatever the state of our emotions. Possessing God's own love with our spirit, there is a quality to it that is forever complete. So, granted, my love for God is complete. What about my love for others? The love for others that is commanded in the Bible is agape. What is required in loving others is not affection, but caring. Caring about others is God within us reaching out in love. Liking others is the self reacting in human emotions. Human emotions are important, but often based on shallow appraisals. Human emotions are desirable, but changeable, and not a valid gauge of God's love in our spirits. When we try to express God's love with human emotions, we distort it with a faulty human instrument. The love of God flows naturally from within our spirits. When his spirit is in us, It is natural for us to care about others. But I'm not sure at all that I care about others. Perhaps you are confusing caring with faulty human emotions. Perhaps you care more than you realize, but you do not always like the ones you care for. We can relate to others with God's spirit of caring when human emotions may be negative or absent. We are commanded by God to care about people. We're not required to like them. But didn't Jesus specifically teach us to love our enemies? Jesus used the word agape, care about your enemies. Jesus cared about the religious leaders of the Pharisees. He wept over them as he wept over Jerusalem, but he did not like them. He called them serpents and sepulchres. But I am told that I must love God and others more, so I try, but I can't always control my feelings. First, we must ask what you mean by feelings. What are people supposed to feel? I don't think I've ever tried to define feelings. I'm not sure I can tell you what feelings are all about. And that's why there is so much confusion about love. People talk about love but don't understand it at all. So it becomes some undefined mystic sensation which they do not understand and therefore cannot handle. Even love for God, for most people, is a vacillating feeling that seems always inconstant or out of reach. The problem is the misunderstanding of human feelings, what they are and what the limits of their reliability. So, before we can talk about controlling feelings, we must understand the nature of feelings. What are feelings? Feelings or emotions are the product of the mind. They're the result of the stimuli from the external environment. The external environment is whatever is going on around us. It includes everything that our senses experience. It's everything we see, hear, feel, taste, and smell. It is everything we pick up through billions of nerve endings. Stimuli are whatever affect us from the environment, and everything around us gives off signals or stimuli. Stimuli are energy impulses that touch the nerve endings and are transmitted through the nerves to the brain. The brain is an instrument collecting the data from these signals. The mind is the self assessing and using the data. All these signals of experience are recorded in the cortex of the brain where they form a pattern which governs our behavior. As the brain receives the signals, it sorts out the data, combines it with existing data, and reacts according to the pattern. One's reaction, for example, to touching a hot iron will depend on one's experience with things like heat, pain, irons, and salves. One's reaction to an unkind remark, on the other hand, will depend on one's experience with life and people and one's own personality. Sometimes the reactions are physical, as when we cut ourselves with a knife. Sometimes the reactions are emotional, as when someone cuts us with an unkind remark. Both experiences, physical and emotional, are reaction to impulses transmitted by nerve cells to the brain. The mind automatically reacts according to the pattern on the cortex, unless conscious control is exercised. Therefore, the way the mind responds to the signals depends on a great many complex factors. There are complex physical factors, chemical makeup, brain function, nerve condition. There are complex psychological factors, character traits, behavior patterns, stored up data of experience. These complex factors have come from the genes, what we were born with, or from knowledge and experience, what we've acquired. They do not have so much to do with spirituality as with forces within and without that work on our minds. Given the millions of fragments of data that affect our responses, the possibility of faulty feelings are endless. And given the complexities of the human mind, we cannot depend on these feelings or use them as a basis of judgment. Feelings, eros, physical love. But there is yet another facet of feelings to consider, physical attraction or fascination. The Greeks called it eros and applied the word when neither caring nor affections were primary considerations. Physical attraction is the granddaddy of mischief in love. It often produces transient ecstasies and lasting miseries. There is a great peril in eros. It affects the nervous system as much as drugs. Persons give off energy impulses, as do all other elements around us. Eros often passes for genuine affection or even caring, but it can trap the unwary in addictive attachment akin to habituating drugs. Where attraction is present before the knowledge of the personality is likely to be based on surface appraisals or nerve impulses. Where one cannot break from another despite obviously questionable qualities, there is likely to be an addiction as tenacious as that of drugs. Eros is not necessarily an illicit love, nor does it always exclude affection or caring, but Eros does have physical love in focus, as Phile focuses on affection and agape on caring. Conclusions. So you see, feelings are neither mystical nor mysterious. They're responses of the brain to stimuli of the nervous system. But your description of love sounds very mechanical to me. It takes all the warmth and vitality out of it. On the contrary, it takes all the illusions out of it, so that warmth and vitality may be real. There is more to love than impulses and nerve cells, as the whole is more than the sums of the parts. But unless we understand the meaning of emotions, we will abuse them, misuse them, and remain captives of them. Applied to our relationships to others, the misunderstanding of love will fester unsound relationships and spoil true ones. The technical description of feelings may be somewhat disenchanting to those who are comfortable with the more traditional idealisms. But to those who have a difficulty in the areas of feelings, it may bring a measure of understanding and hope. The problem with the idealistic views of love and emotions is that sooner or later they tend to bring devastating disillusionment. It may seem logical to assume that human feelings of affection ought to be transferred to God as part of what we call love. And the problems with such feelings would indicate problems with love, which should be corrected by prayer and spiritual exercises. This view may seem adequate until one experiences persistent negative emotions, emptiness, depression, or even anger and doubt. The reasons may have to do with normal physical or physiological reactions, but if they be treated as spiritual problems, they confuse our true relationship to God. Further, when too much weight is placed on human feelings, the loss of them can bring bitter disappointment and needless guilt. It is not always possible or advisable to separate the various facets of love, but where there are difficulties, such evaluation is a good place to start. Human emotions are complex and may partake of many facets. Friendships are usually enhanced and stabilized by agape caring. On the other hand, Phile affection is a normal and common part of close ties that exist in our relationship with God and His family. Still, we confront the persistent principle regarding human feelings. The complexities involved preclude undue judgment about them or reliance on them. But given sensitivity and sympathy of Christ for human brethren, we have the liberty to wrestle with these troublesome feelings and still retain His favor. While forces affecting our feelings are often beyond our control, the way we cope with the feelings is our own responsibility. We cannot help how we feel. We can help how we deal with how we feel. But doesn't our human nature change with the coming of Christ? Doesn't Paul say that all of those in Christ are new creatures? Paul also said, "In my flesh there dwells no good thing. It is the spirit that is new and not the flesh." The problems of the natural self do not necessarily change. Some things may change, some may not. But how is it that some things change and some do not? Traits we are born with do not change as readily as traits we acquire. Some traits are inherited, like sensitivity to pain. We call it threshold of tolerance. Response to physical or emotional pain depends on the threshold of tolerance. As some people feel physical pain more keenly than others, some people are more easily hurt than others. Hypersensitivity is but one example of traits not necessarily changed by the coming of Christ. Other examples are shyness and forwardness, emotionalism and reserve, and many more which have nothing to do with spirituality. Some traits are acquired and may change with the coming of Christ. Selfishness is a good example, and tendencies to loss of temper. Some traits are complex mixtures of heredity and environment, habits we develop based on areas of vulnerability and change with difficulty. Encouragement in the matter comes from reality. God is patient and gives us the freedom to work with our feelings. David said that God has pity on us as a father his children, for he knoweth our frame, he remembereth that we are dust. No effort was made to whitewash the weakness, even of his prophets. But as he said to Paul, "My strength is made perfect in weakness." So if the natural self has not changed, how then can I control my feelings? We've discussed the meaning of feelings, and we must ask you, What you mean by control? Are you talking about deception or perception? Are you thinking of discretion or pretension? I don't think I understand. All I know is I try to feel the way I should about God and others. And how should you feel? Trying to feel things may be merely mental manipulation. Forcing feelings or denying them are only forms of deception. Understanding feelings and coping with them is insight or perception. Masking feelings with a false front is hypocrisy, pretending. Exercising care in the expression of feelings is wisdom or discretion. There is as much misunderstanding about the word control as there is about the meaning of love or feelings. What kind of control? To control something means to be in charge of it. Neither denial nor falsification can be classed as control. But if I just let my feelings go, they cause too much trouble for me as for others. That is quite true, but we're not talking about letting go. We're talking about understanding and handling the feelings. It is not controlling the feelings themselves we're talking about. It is controlling the actions and reactions involved in the feelings. Since the feelings are natural reactions to stimuli, they can only be genuinely changed by changing the stimuli or the patterns in the brain that cause the reactions. Thus, whatever is affecting the feelings must be dealt with, and that is a matter of understanding and handling the feelings. But isn't handling just another word for controlling? By no means. Controlling means restricting or masking the feelings. Handling the feelings means facing them and coping with them as they are, or if possible, changing them by dealing with the cause. But my true feelings for God and others are sometimes negative. In fact, I often have doubts and conflicts and uncertainty. Pressing oneself to feel for God or others what is expected but not genuine is not handling feelings, but engaging in deception. Realizing the faulty nature of feelings and not relying on them as a test for the love of God is a way of handling or coping with them. It's quite possible to have lasting and constant identity with God and still experience uncertain human feelings and mood swings. It's both unnecessary and foolish to feign feelings for God or others. It's not a sound spiritual effort but self-deception. On the other hand, care in the expression of feelings is discretion, quite another thing than masking feelings by pretending. There are many ways to exercise care in the expression of feelings without being false or hypocritical. One can be gracious without being ardent. One can imply concern without implying affection. It is not wrong to spare another the full disclosure of feelings. It is wrong to deceive another with the pretension of false feelings. It is not so much a matter of control as it is understanding or perception. It is not pretending or deception, but care or discretion. Perception involves facing the feelings and coming to terms with them, understanding them, changing them, or living with them and coping with them. If they're justified, we must learn to live with them and cope with them. If they are unjustified, we must seek to understand them and deal with them. Unjustified feelings may be from irrational prejudice, or they may be from ignorance or misunderstanding. Many times, knowledge and new understanding will bring changes, but often they are deeply rooted patterns not so easily changed. But what if I know my feelings are wrong and yet I cannot seem to overcome them? Remember, you cannot always help how you feel, given the complexities of the human mind. But if you say, I can't help how I feel, what keeps me from ignoring my feelings and taking them seriously? The love of God in your spirit is a caring force that simply does not ignore such feelings or take them lightly. So do not deny your feelings. That is deception. Do not falsify them. That is pretension. And yet, if they are faulty or unjustified, do see in them the human weakness and do seek for understanding. Do pray, but not for easy solutions, some magical change of feelings. Do pray for understanding and enlightenment that you may mature. In the grace of God, we have both the liberty and the latitude to work out in time our troublesome and stubborn feelings. God is not pleased, of course, with prejudice, but neither does he judge unduly transient human emotions. Human emotions are not really matters for spiritual judgment. It is not guilt but good sense that is often needed. But are negative feelings about others ever justified in the context of Christian love? Yes, indeed, if we take our example from Jesus. He had very negative feelings about the Pharisees, though he cared about them. Remember, feelings are natural responses of the brain to stimuli or impulses from the environment around us. The mind reacts to these stimuli with pleasure or pain, responding alike to physical and emotional impulses. Even if the mind may sometimes imagine pain without apparent reason, it cannot deny the reaction, though there may be need for evaluation. If one is mistreating us or someone we love, we react with displeasure, as surely as when we experience physical pain and react with displeasure. Jesus reacted with displeasure to the Pharisees. They were hurting the people, and he called them snakes. But I've been told that we must look for the good in people. Didn't the Pharisees do any good deeds? Jesus did not deny that they had done good deeds. He condemned them for hypocrisy and pretense and misleading the people. The offense must ultimately be dealt with despite other qualities the offender may possess. We do not acquit a thief, for example, just because he loved his mother and gave the spoils to her. Some Pharisees, like Nicodemus, repented and came to Jesus. These he freely forgave and warmly welcomed. But I have trouble forgiving some, and yet I know I should forgive everyone. Only if they repent and ask for it. Even Christ extends forgiveness only to those who seek it. Negative feelings are normal responses to negative situations. When the situation is corrected, the feelings usually change. And if they don't change, if one still harbors a grudge, then it becomes an unjustified feeling and it must so be handled. But always beyond the maze of human emotions, justified or not, is the inexhaustible love of God, the ceaseless sense of caring. So we're back again to the distinction between the caring love of God within and the expression of human affection. Yes, we have determined that human feelings are the product of the brain and the nervous system, as they react to forces within and without. They are a function of the flesh, and while normal and desirable, are changeable and undependable as a test of the love of God. When we talk about love, we must take into account these distinctions, otherwise we will always be confused and insecure about it. It is not within the power of the human mind to affect the love of God in the Spirit. The mind can only foster or hinder the effects of love, either in the contemplation of it or in the expression of it. Either one has God himself and his love dwelling in the Spirit, or one is expressing only a human fabrication of God and love. The true love of God is shown not by human feelings about him, but by a prevailing sense of identity with him, despite human feelings. If we think that the love of God is shown by feelings about him, our peace and security will always fluctuate with our feelings. We will never think that we love God enough, or we will think that our negative feelings separate us from him. But we have determined that the love of God in our spirits remains constant in spite of our fluctuating human emotions. We are therefore faced not with a spiritual judgment about love, but with the handling of human feelings. We have separated love as the caring consciousness of God from love as human feelings based on natural responses of the mind. While the love of God is in our spirit, it is stable and constant. Love as human feeling requires constant attention. We have learned that the feelings are not controlled but handled. It is the actions surrounding the feelings that must be controlled. So then, the question of how to control the feelings is unsound. We should really be asking how to handle the feelings and control the actions. That is true, and the handling of feelings is manageable when we understand them and put them in the proper perspective. And you say that I do not have to try to feel something for God. But is there nothing I can do to cultivate God's love? If you mean changing the quality of God's love in the Spirit, no. But there is much you can do to change the sense and impact of his love. God's love flows through our mind in the measure of our focus. If we fill our minds with earthly things, we cloud the sense of his presence. If we focus on self-interest, we lose his perspective on things. If we neglect fellowship with him, we dull our appreciation of him. All of these things have not to do with the reality of his love in our spirits, but with our appreciation and expression of his love in the daily life. The love of God would be absent from us only if he were absent from us. To think of his love as coming and going with our feelings is absurd, but it is equally absurd to think that we can live as we please without affecting the sense of his presence or our growth in the knowledge of him. When we cultivate the knowledge of God and his love, we do not have so much trouble with our feelings about him. Similarly, when we cultivate the knowledge of his power, we do not have so much trouble with our sense of faith and peace. But how do we cultivate our knowledge of God? Must we become religious and contemplate him all day long? No, it is not continuous contemplation, but steady application. It is not the pursuit of spirituality, but living with Christ in daily practicality. We cultivate the knowledge of God through his word, not by being scholars, but by feeding on it as sheep grazing under a shepherd. We cultivate the knowledge of God through prayer, Not so much in formal intercession as in the quiet daily interaction with him. And we cultivate our knowledge of God through the experience of ourselves and others, sharing our love with him day by day and sharing it with another. While the presence of God's love remains constant in our spirits, our daily sense of well-being depends on our growth and our knowledge of him. Cultivating the knowledge of God is a way of handling feelings about him. It is changing the thought pattern in the mind that produces the feelings. Insecure or faulty feelings about God change by correcting faulty images of him. Feelings of appreciation, even affection, follow from acquiring deeper knowledge of him. Of course, such changes in the mind do not change its basic nature and therefore must not be seen as permanently resolving difficulties. As long as we're on earth, we will have to wrestle with human nature. But we can foster stability in our daily lives by cultivating our knowledge of God. It is important to understand, however, that the stability in our daily lives is neither a certain result of salvation nor a requisite to the favor of God. Stability is important, is advisable, is admirable. It keeps the feeling steadier, but it does not make one spiritual. Sometimes people who are strongly identified with Christ seem wanting, nevertheless, in emotional and functional stability. A disorderly life may not reflect well on Christianity, but certainly will not have a bearing on one's salvation. So, granted that the uncertainties and instabilities of our natural selves do not separate us from God nor bring us his disfavor, and granted that the feelings are undependable as a gauge of God's love in our spirit, but what if one wants stability in one's life and wants friends and affection? How does one go about developing right relationships and handling feelings? And what help can one expect from God in dealing with the self? Where do human affections fit in the matter of love? How do we view them, and why do we care if they are not part of God's love? As a matter of fact, what motivation does one have for getting one's life together if it isn't a requirement for salvation? Now, we're dealing with an entirely different matter, stability of feelings and actions in the flesh versus strength of the inner spirit. One may have to go through many experiences of fleshly instability in order to understand the weakness of the flesh and learn not to depend on it. But first, as to motivation, we do in fact care about our feelings and actions, not because it is required or rewarded, but because Christ is in us. But caring about how we feel or act is quite a different thing than the actual handling the feelings or the actions. Caring about how we feel or act is a natural result of God's Spirit within us. Actually handling the feelings and actions is a result of various motivations. God is, of course, interested in our developing wisdom and stability. In fact, Jesus chided the Pharisees for lack of it. He is also interested in our developing sound relationships with others, especially insofar as it involves kindness and forgiveness. But whether or not our relationships are accompanied by human affection, it is a personal matter and depends on many controllable and uncontrollable factors. He is also interested in our developing sound relationships with others, especially insofar as it involves kindness and forgiveness. As to how we view human affection, it is natural, acceptable, and desirable, but must always be distinguished from the love of God and the Spirit. The cultivating of human affection is still another matter. Where agape caring is commanded, human affection must be earned. Our oneness with the body of believers is secured by the Spirit of God. It is an eternal unity and not dependent on human effort. But cultivating friendships with members of the body depends much on human factors, personality, interests, and efforts. It would be simple if we could say that the presence of Christ within assures one of compatibility with all the members of his body. But the truth is that all believers, whatever their claim to spirituality, have their difficulty with human relationships. We must conclude that the maintaining of friendship is an earthly matter. Accordingly, losing friends does not lose us the favor of God. Sometimes the Spirit is involved. Friends may forsake the follower of Christ, but more often it is human carelessness. We are selfish, thoughtless, unkind. The love of God in our spirit remains steadfast in spite of human behavior, but the human feelings are fluctuating and fragile. If we want friendship and affection, it will require careful effort. We must control our behavior and handle our feelings wisely. If we do not care to make the effort of self-control, we may walk alone. The command to care about others does not include liking another's behavior. We are responsible for our own actions and reactions to others. We cannot put off on God the task of making people like us, nor can we depend on the patience and long-suffering of others, admirable virtues, but hardly constant even in Christians. We hope that people will be patient with us and understanding, but who can know at the moment when affection is threatened? The feelings are fickle. They ebb and flow with changing actions. Carelessness with another's affection is risky. The limits are uncertain. It is the fragile nature of feelings that makes them so difficult to handle and not dependable as a part of our essential relationship to God. Still, affection and friendships are the important elements in an earthly life, worth cultivating so long as we recognize the limitations. But there is a price to pay, and selfish and thoughtful treatment of others, walking among the people of the earth in kindness and grace. But are not all believers supposed to be that way? Do not all possess the love and grace of God in their spirit? All believers do possess the love of God, but all have difficulty expressing it. That is why the Bible speaks often of the way Christians ought to treat each other. All who possess the Spirit of God have the sense of caring about others, but not all who have the sense of caring express it in appropriate behavior. Just so, one may have friendship with another and be careless in behavior appropriate to maintaining of it. Carelessness takes many forms: neglect, harshness, thoughtlessness. The result is the same, the risking of the friendship. The preserving of a friendship is a matter of priorities. The value we place upon that friendship versus the demands. If the friendship is important enough, we will modify our behavior to preserve it. On the other hand, the demands are not in keeping with our priorities, we may choose to let the friendship go. That does not mean we cease to care in the agape sense, but that we have realistically faced the limits of phile, human affection. Appraising relationships thus is the sound way of handling feelings. Agape caring is universal. Phile affection is based on priorities and compatibility. When Christians come together in Christ, they enjoy the unity of the Spirit. When they gather on a social basis, they confront human incompatibilities. Unity in the Spirit, a vastly different thing than the compatibility of the flesh, is preserved in spite of human differences when Christ is the focus of fellowship. Are you saying that Christians should never come together socially? No, indeed. But when they do, they are more vulnerable to the frailties of the flesh. If we keep these distinctions in mind, it should stabilize our relationships, both in the security of our love in Christ and in the handling of earthly ties. We'll be more conscious of constancy of our caring and more careful in cultivating friendship. But, granted we have the love of God as his gift in our spirits, what help can we expect from him in handling our feelings and friendships? In the first place, the desire for handling our feelings and friendships comes from the presence of God and his love in our spirit. The Holy Spirit within provides us with a new attitude towards God and others, and with God's own view of life and the universe. In the second place, seeing things from God's perspective helps us to control self-interest, the greatest of all threats to friendship. But I know a great many Christians who are still selfish. There is a difference between knowing God's view and actually adopting it. When we insist on our view of things, we obscure God's view and become vulnerable to the distortions of human thoughts and feelings. In the third place, we can pray and seek God's help in these matters. We can ask him for wisdom and understanding in our relationships. We can ask him to help us sort out our priorities and purposes and to guard us from incompatible situations and relationships. We can ask him to help us with our feelings and attitudes, to give us understanding and enlightenment and grace. And we can ask him to help us to be a blessing to others, to be more of a help to others than a problem to them. In the fourth place, God allows events and circumstances in our lives for growth. We must be receptive to God's dealings with us so we may grow in grace and stature. Maturity is essential in establishing sound relationships and in maintaining stability of feelings and attitudes. So then, God does help us in many ways. But are there things we must do to cultivate friendships? There is a certain amount of discipline and control necessary. It is the price we pay for the privilege of having friends. Remember, what we control is not the feelings, but the actions and reactions. Anger, for instance, is allowable. Jesus was angry on a number of occasions. But the expression of the anger must be controlled. The words are hard to retrieve, and impulsive actions leave scars and destroy friendships. The tendency to loss of temper may be inherited, but overreaction loses friends. Controlling reactions begins with evaluating what is worth the loss of friendships. In the cultivating of friendships, consideration, thoughtfulness, and kindness is essential. These are really habits of life that can be developed into spontaneous reactions. They are not necessarily qualities produced only by the Spirit. There are many non-Christians who are kind and many non-Christians who are not. Sensitivity is another behavior pattern that can be developed, being aware of the feelings of others and guarding tongue and action. But are not some people overly sensitive? Shouldn't they learn not to be so easily hurt? It is not possible for us to judge what should or should not hurt another. It is for us to be sensitive to what does, in fact, hurt another. Ignoring sensitivities is potentially damaging both to personalities and friendships. Even friendly digs and teasing can hit raw nerves and spoil friendships. The practice of kindness and sensitivity, everyone, is the best expression of the love of God and the safest rule. The preserving of friendships requires continual care. Life is constantly changing. The garden must be kept weeded. It is necessary to be open and honest with one another. Hidden problems build resentments and erode relationships. In learning how to live with others, it is important to help them learn to live with us. Reluctance to let another know the things that are troubling one can only bring more grief in the end, when the disclosure is finally made. It is in the first place unsound to let resentment build up. It is in the second place unsound to think discussion will not help. It is in the third place unfair to leave another with delusions, to let another assume things are all right when they're not. But above all, human relationships require patience and grace. Allowances must be made. Behavior is a complex problem. Misjudging motives is a common error too readily made, and it is too high an expectation, more from the other person than oneself. Human relationships are difficult at best. We often fail, however hard we try, and Satan uses our frailties to sow discord among believers. But though these problems will plague us as long as we're on earth, in the end, God's caring love prevails beyond all human failure. So we have three kinds of love: the agape, caring love of God within, philia, affection of family and friends, and the eros of physical desire. The caring love of God comes when he comes to dwell in our spirits. Human affection must be earned. Physical desire is a common human heritage. The love God requires for himself and others is his own eternal, caring consciousness. Friendships and affections are part of the transient human emotion. Substantial love can possibly partake of all three facets, but confusing them causes great difficulty in a stable relationship to God.